Hold on. My name is Sarah Berry. I'm 39. It's Friday, July 31st, 2020. The city is St. George, Utah. Justine is my partner's name, and she's a OSS partner.
Awesome. So I'm Justine Lee. I turned 34 next week. Today is Friday, July 31st, 2020. I am calling from New York City. Sarah is my partner, and she is my OSS partner. 5 minute bio. Did you want to go first, Sarah?
Sure. Okay. Let's see here. Not right now. If you need something, go ask your brother. He's in charge for the next hour. What? Only if Noreen's not watching. Right now, I need you guys to be quiet. Well, then let her start a new show. I told you to go play your 3DS or my 3DS. You can have the turn after I'm done. Okay, sorry. Okay, I'm a mom. No, I was born in Canoga Park, California. I grew up mostly in San Fernando and Santa Clarita Valleys, a lot in apartments and mobile homes, because when I was really young, my parents got divorced. So I was raised by two families and three houses, I say, because I was raised a lot by my mom, by my dad, and by my grandparents. My grandparents were a big influence in my life. They were the ones who raised me in the church until I was about eight. I went to church with them every Sunday and everything like that. So they were a big influence, especially in my early years. Then my mom got remarried when I was only like six. My dad got remarried right before I turned nine. I ended up with having a total of seven siblings. My mom had two boys. My dad and stepmom had three boys. And then my mom adopted another boy and another girl when I was in high school. They're all way younger than me. It's the oldest is almost 8 years younger than me, and the youngest is 18 years younger than me. Let's see here. So that was pretty much. When I was 11, my mom moved to Missouri. I hated it. So the first chance I got when I went to high school, I moved in with my dad. And it wasn't so much that I didn't want to live with my mom anymore. I just hated Missouri. So then I wanted to go back to California. So at that point, my dad lived in Victorville. I went to high school there. Life wasn't so easy. My dad was a little abusive, mostly verbally and emotionally, but I did get a couple instances of physical abuse. My mom, it was hard with her too, because my whole life I grew up, she had bipolar disorder. And I was always afraid that one day she'd die, because at least when I got older and understood what happened, because my grandma committed suicide when my mom was 15. So I was just terrified that that would one day happen to my mom. So those are kind of like, I guess, my difficult things at growing up. I moved back to my mom right before I graduated from high school. And at this point we were in Gilbert, Arizona, which is a suburb outside of Phoenix. And then I tried going to school there. It didn't work very well because of my ADHD, which I was diagnosed when I was in middle school, but I was, because my siblings had it worse, I didn't think I really had it. Then, well, anyway, I moved around a lot. I went back to California to live with my grandparents. Then I got married. Then I got divorced. Then I got remarried. I have one child with my first husband, and I have four children with my second husband, a total of six pregnancies, because I lost one baby with a miscarriage, early miscarriage. And yeah, that's pretty much it. Oh, And I'm a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and that's a big part of my identity. And yeah, that's about it.
Thank you for sharing, Sarah. So at this point, do I just share my bio, but I'm not necessarily asking questions or like comment? Okay, got it. So I also grew up in California, so we have that in common right off the bat. I grew up in Northern California, though. And my family was much smaller. I grew up with both my parents who immigrated from Taiwan maybe 5 or 6 years before I was born. And they immigrated to for education. My dad was studied chemical engineering, and my mom was a studied special education. I was born, and then 2.5 years later, my brother was born. And I feel like my childhood was, when I look back on it, it was mostly happy, but there were definitely some dark spots or dark times. Similar to you, Sarah, my father was also, could be emotionally, verbally abusive, and at times physically abusive. And I think that at the time, especially in middle and high school, I really resented him. And that was probably the darkest part of my childhood. But I was very close to my mom and my brother. And we also had a family dog. And I also had many friends. And so I think that helped me feel more confident about myself, and feel like I had some, you know, purpose in the world. I've always been a very curious person. Since I was young, I wanted to be a journalist, and was just always reading and asking questions, and you know, like asking my parents questions. And when, as soon as we got the internet when I was in middle school, I'd be like looking things up. But we had like a you know, like looking things up in encyclopedias and all that stuff. I've always been a curious person, and I've always really loved being in groups of people. I think that has to do with the fact that, like, whenever I would feel like I wanted to get away from my house, I wanted to be with friends. And so I just like the idea of, like, gathering people and creating warm environments. I've also always loved to eat and cook. And my desire to really learn more, like, explore cooking more started in college when I actually had to cook for myself. And yeah, college for me was a big turning point in my life, because it was the first time that I was leaving home. I left, so I grew up in the Bay Area in California, and I left for college. I went across the country to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And I was there for 4 years and just realized that there were so many, I just got to know people from different parts of the country, and kind of got out of my bubble. And yeah, I think that, there's just been a lot of, I don't think I've changed, like, in terms of my core values, I don't think I've changed much over the years. Like, I'm a very family oriented person, very friend oriented person. And, really love stories. So the journalism, like that journalist in me, is still there, even though I didn't end up pursuing journalism. Oh, so another thing that I think that has affected me is the fact that I graduated from college in 2008, which was like a horrible recession. And so at that time, I just ended up kind of being willing to take any job. And I think that did brew, plant a seed of insecurity in me, job insecurity. But I think that I've always had this drive to create. And so Make America Dinner Again is an example of that. And I'm glad that I started it because I've gotten to meet people like you, Sarah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, the next question. Can you tell me about someone who has been kindest to you in your life?
Oh, okay. Let's see. I think it's probably, well, I don't have to pick just one. It's probably both of my grandparents. They really taught me. I have a lot of my core values and worldviews and philosophies kind of come from them. They were really good to me, you know, when I was young, but then also when I was going through a really hard time in my life, in my early 20s, not really knowing, you know, I think going through what a lot of people that age go through, not really knowing where I was, what I was doing, where I should go, being a little bit boy obsessed and obsessed with getting married, which was not good. Ended up with me marrying the wrong person. I ended up living with them for 2 years, and having that bedrock to lean from was really important and really helpful with me. And they've just, even when they were kind of being parently, they were always very kind about it and very different from what I received from my parents. So it was really good. I'm glad I got to live with them for 2 years. It was the best time of my adult life, that's for sure.
Mm. Was this your mom's parents or your father's parents?
Oh, these were my father's parents. My mom's mom died when she was 15.
That's right.
And my mom's dad died from lung cancer when I was 5. Which
got
the good thing about that is I never had any desire to take any drugs, especially not cigarettes, because in my mind, cigarettes killed my grandfather, so I wasn't going to touch them.
Mm-hmm.
And now Sarah asked Justine the same question.
Oh, yes. Yes. Oh, right. Oh, darn. Sorry. It's hard for me to pull up the messages. Okay. Can you tell me about someone who has been kindest to you in your life?
Yeah, so a family member, my mom's older sister, my aunt, is one of the kindest people I know. And she is, she lives in Taiwan, and she was a nurse for her entire career. She was a nurse in a nursery. So she worked with newborns, and she is just one of the most caring people ever, but not in a way that feels like smothering or, you know, it's just kind of like the right amount, or it feels like the right amount. So I moved to Taiwan. I lived in Taiwan for 2 years, in my mid-20s, so like 24, 25. And when I moved to Taiwan, she really just like took care of me and showed me the ropes, and would go, take me grocery shopping. Another thing about my aunt is that she never got married and she didn't have children. And so she ended up taking care of my grandparents as they got older. They lived with her. She took care of them. You know, she had obviously training as a nurse, but she just also is like a very sensible, like self-sacrificial person, selfless person, I guess is a better word. She's always been kind to me, and like can tell if she can read people well, so she can always tell if like something is bothering me, if something's on my mind, just always rooting for me. And I think that because she's never been married or had kids, well, just another thing about her is I wouldn't say she's naive, but I think she has this kind of innocence about her, about the world. And so I think that I might not always tell her like all my thoughts or, you know, I don't know, but there's just this kind of like simple affection that we have for each other. And yeah, she's just, I feel like because I know, so after my grandparents passed away and my aunt was then had living alone and had no one to take care of, I did definitely feel like, oh, I want to be there to take care of her however I can, even though we're so many thousands of miles away from each other. So I will send her messages. We like chat on Facebook, and I've also sent her cards in the mail. But yeah, she's also very independent though. So she swims, she water paints and is really good at it. And I think she fills her time. And I think not only is she kind, but she is someone who inspires me because I see that you can be, she's an example of someone who can, you know, live a solo life, a solitary life and be fulfilled and kind of be just like, you know, someone that I respect and look up to. Yeah. Okay. So the next question is, what is your earliest memory of politics?
I guess I would, I don't know. I remember turning 18 and just registering for the Republican Party because that's what you were if you were LDS. Or a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. That's just like what was in my head. I didn't really know. And then in government class, we had to take a test. And then I found out I was more center to left. So then I ended up just dropping out of the Republican Party and becoming an independent. And then I registered for the Democrats in 2008 so I could vote for Hillary in the primaries. And then, oddly enough, after around 2009, 2010, after my divorce and after I was a single mom in the recession, which, like you said, that was tough. I started listening to radio shows and things just started changing and I started becoming more center again, went back to just being an independent. I'm still an independent now. But I'm much more right-leaning than I was. Just things just slowly started changing. I think, well, no, it was mostly because my stepmom said, if you really knew what was going on, you'd be more conservative. And I took that as a challenge. So that's just kind of our relationship with her and my dad. They challenge me and then I do stuff. So I took that as a challenge and decided, well, I'll show you and I'm going to learn more and I'm still going to be left-leaning. And she ended up being right. So.
Interesting. Yeah.
Oh, yes. And then now, dang it, I keep hitting the wrong icon. Okay. What is your earliest memory of politics?
So, my earliest memory would have to be Bill Clinton on TV. And the whole, just like the whole Monica Lewinsky scandal. I was in middle school, I think. I don't remember how old I was, but I remember thinking like, oh, like it was on the news all the time and in newspapers because there wasn't internet or maybe there, I don't know if there was internet. Anyway, I just remember thinking like, oh, this seems like a really big deal, but I don't fully understand it. And, you know, in California, because California is a blue state and the Bay Area where I grew up is also blue. I think that I still somehow, even though I knew what he did was wrong because he lied, you know, to the public, I still felt like, oh, like for some reason, this idea had been drilled in my mind that like, oh, a president's private affairs and what they choose to do, like outside their marriage or within their marriage or whatever is like, does not actually affect how they are as a president. And Bill Clinton was a good president. And he, you know, like, I think that I think that, and this is understandable, and it sounds like similar to Sarah, like I just kind of like took things, I just took whatever information was, you know, being shared with me at face value. I was like, this must be true. And it just, so I've been a, you know, even though that was my first political memory, I still found myself, because my parents and like, I guess, friends' parents or the environment generally was like a more left-leaning and democratic of the Democratic Party. That's just how I registered as well. When I could vote, but see, my first, the first time I could vote was was in 2008. So that was a really big deal because it was the year that, you know, Obama was elected. And I think it was, and I was in college, so it was just like this, I think I felt very inspired by him, and many people around me felt inspired by him. And yeah, but I think that slowly, especially with the Bush era, I think I just started realizing like, realizing and learning that actually what you hear in the news and what you hear, you know, you see is not always what is actually happening. And there's a lot of stuff happening behind the scenes, and things are not so simple. And especially with the whole, you know, like 9/11, the war, the subsequent wars. And then, yeah, actually, if I think about it, 9/11 has also really shaped our country, but also shaped me and my views of our country. I think that it kind of like lifted this just made me realize that things are more complicated, and that that the U.S. doesn't always make the best decisions and isn't the best country in the world always. And yeah, it just made me a little more, I guess, critical or skeptical, inquisitive. Yeah. Okay. Next question. Why did you want to do this interview today, Sarah?
Well, I love stories too, but I think I like to think of it more as my, I mean, I never studied it a little bit, but not really. It's more of a, rather than a, more of a, what's anthropologist. I love cool stories. I love cultures. I love learning how they grew up and things. And so I wanted to, you know, hear from somebody else. And I was also kind of happy to talk to somebody who has a different culture than me. Because I love hearing about other people's experiences and how they grew up maybe differently than I did. So that was for me.
Yeah.
Okay. And then why do I keep doing that? And then why did you want to do this interview today?
Same reason, honestly. I've known about StoryCorps for a while now, for at least, you know, 6 or 7 years. And I've always loved their I loved the concept, and I love the stories that I've heard on the radio. And so I just wanted an opportunity to participate. I think that I was really excited to bring this to the Matter Discussion Group. And I felt like, you know, usually I'm a facilitator or a moderator. I'm a little bit more behind the scenes, but I actually want to participate so I can better relate to folks who have participated and know what the experience is like. I also was looking forward to learning more about you, Sarah, because I feel like we've gotten like little snippets here and there in the messenger thread and through emails and stuff, but I feel like I've already like learned so much more about you that I didn't know before. So
yeah,
it's nice to have that background. Yeah. And I really appreciate how open you've been.
Oh, well, that's just who I am, to be honest.
I can continue helping you, but you're off on your own now, unless you need my help with questions.
Yeah. Well, I did actually have some follow-up questions to like, after hearing like some of your like your story. You mentioned earlier that you did not like Missouri, and you hated Missouri, and I'm curious why. I've never been there, but
a big portion. It's beautiful as long as you can stand the weather, which I can't. I absolutely hated it. It's way too wet, period. I hate mm-hmm. humidity. I grew up in the desert. Went back to the desert as soon as I could. I like the desert. I don't like humidity. Mm-hmm. It is way too hot and humid in the summer and just way too cold in the winter. I've heard from some people who live in dry cold that wet cold is also worse. I don't know. I've never lived in dry cold. I pretty much stay away from the cold as much as possible. Another reason why I like living in the desert. So
St. George is considered is like a desert climate.
Yes. There is actually a kind of a combination of deserts kind of meet right where I'm at, but mostly it's still the Mojave Desert, the high desert of the Mojave Desert. So kind of like it's kind of funny. I went to high school at the other end of the Mojave Desert, and now I'm living on the opposite end of the Mojave Desert.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
I've never been there, but I'm curious now.
Yeah, I grew up in the California part of the Mojave Desert. If you know, Palmdale, Lancaster, that's kind of was on the other side of California, but that was LA County. I lived the San Bernardino County part of it, but yeah, I grew up there.
Got it. Is most of it residential, or is some of it like I don't know what the right word is, but like untouched, or
most of it now is residential. There's a reserve pretty close where I am, and that will stay untouched, the Red Cliffs Reserve. And we're not, I mean, once you get outside of St. George, there's still a lot of rural areas, a lot of ranching, or just untouched areas. Plus there's the not very far from me, I forget which one it is, but there is an Indian reservation. So of course that's mostly untouched.
Right.
But the actual city's grown a lot since mm-hmm. 2015, because a lot of people like me ended up moving from all over the place, a lot from California. So
got it.
I love it because it's kind of like, I feel like it's my people, because a lot of people who are of my faith think a lot of the way I do, but a lot of them are also from Southern California, just like me. So it's kind of nice.
Oh, interesting. Okay. That's good to know. Yeah. I would say that, one other question I have is, did you always know that you wanted to have children?
Yes. I always wanted children. I always wanted to be a stay-at-home mom. As a matter of fact, my profession I chose before that was I was a teacher. And I was a preschool teacher specifically. And I actually I had an early childhood degree, preschool certificate, because I did go back to school to do that. So I could be a preschool teacher. So it's like I almost wanted to be a mom even before I was a mom.
You loved being around and working with children.
Especially babies. Loved it. My two favorite ages are their babies or the pre-Kers right before kindergarten. And yeah, I loved it. Mm-hmm. But once I had kids, I never want to be a preschool teacher ever again, because I got burnt out with my own kids, and I love my own kids, but I don't want to teach other people's kids anymore.
But I totally get that.
It's kind of interesting. Yeah. It was kind of like mom training.
Yeah, I also really love kids, actually. I don't have any kids of my own, but I just think that they're I don't know why, but I feel like every time I meet a kid, I'm always so impressed that, like, I always think, like, oh, wow, I don't think I was that smart or insightful when I was that age. Or, like, I feel like there's so much to learn from kids, because they are unfiltered at times, or they, like, they just say what's on their mind, and they're making observations that are very, like, pure almost, you know? And so, I don't know. I just really appreciate.
Yeah, I love their curiosity, their willingness to learn, and their innocence. You know, and the fact that they will go up to anybody and any other kid and play with them, and they don't care about all the stuff that grown-ups care about, which is really nice. You know,
It's very pure that way.
It is.
They don't, you know, they don't care about color or religion or sex or any of that stuff. All they care about is, that's another kid around my age. I want to play with them. So
yeah,
it is really nice when I see that of that. I even had one girl one time in school used to have a batik shirt that a batik shirt got me from India, and I had bangles that another teacher got me from Pakistan. I used to work at a very diverse school, and they'd bring stuff back to me when they visited their home countries a lot. So I was dressing at a different school, and I was dressing in my Indian and Pakistani garb, and she was a little girl who was American, and she came up to me and she was like, "Are you from India too?" And she got all happy thinking I was from India, so I don't look like it at all, because she didn't understand that color thing. She just saw that I was wearing Indian clothes, so that must mean I was Indian too.
Oh,
so that was really sweet.
That is really sweet. Yeah, kids are sweet.
Oh, and then yeah, you are married, right?
I'm not married, not actually. Married.
Okay, I couldn't remember if both you and Tria were married or if just Tria was married. I wasn't.
Yeah, married. Tria's married. Tria got married last year.
Right.
They have two cats, and they are. I think that they do want to have children, but I'm not sure they're going to start trying.
Right.
And then I am not married. I don't have kids, but I think that since I was young, I like just had this, I thought I was going to be married. Like I had this plan, you know, that I was going to be married by 27, have my first kid by 30. And it just didn't end up that way. Like I've been in several relationships, but it just hasn't, they haven't worked out. And I think that I saw or I observed my parents' marriage, which my parents are still together, but they've had a really rocky marriage. And I think my mom was especially unhappy in it, and knew that she could have been happier with someone else. And my dad has anger issues. And so I think that I've also been really cautious about marriage. Like I think that I want to avoid marrying someone like my dad. He's gotten better with age. He's like 64 now. And my brother and his wife are about to expect their first child in a couple months. And so that's like really softened my dad. And he's like really excited to be a grandfather and is like, whenever we're talking about the baby, just he's always smiling and excited to has been like bringing food that my sister-in-law Jessica has been craving and like just really wants to take care of her and make sure she's okay. So that's been really cool to see. But I definitely think that like throughout my life in terms of like getting into romantic relationships, I've always just been like, oh, I need to avoid marrying someone like my dad. And anytime I've dated someone, there have been a couple people I've dated long term, where I started seeing signs that they were like my dad, and I just started building walls. And anyway, so I think that, yeah, I would still like to find a life partner, but I also have accepted that if it doesn't happen, I also feel like I have a community, and that, you know, even if all my friends and family end up getting married and having kids, I will just have to find community in other ways. But I feel like being single for a good portion of my adult life has really like, I guess made me more independent and made me focus more on my relationship with myself and helped me better understand like myself. It's just given me a lot of time to like reflect and work on the things that I want to work on internally, you know, and then also like externally. I do think if I meet the right person, I would love to have a kid.
Sarah, there's some interference on your phone. Oh. Is there something touching it or anything? It's like rhythmically knocking on it or anything? Just letting you beware.
I'm like knocking on my baby's leg, maybe.
Yeah, that might be it. The phone is very sensitive, so it must be picking it up. The microphone is picking it up, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Or it's my headphones, maybe. unfortunately, because the type of phone I have, I only have Bluetooth headphones.
It's better. Yeah.
Okay, it is better. Okay. See, what was I going to say? I say that that's actually, I think that's smart of you, because I actually really wish that I had paid more attention to my parents and been more cautious. I ended up marrying somebody who's a lot kind of like both my dads, but in the bad ways, not the good ways. He was had anger issues a lot like my dad. And then he was just very organized, things like that, with my stepdad, which I thought would be a good thing. But it ended up being a bad thing because we had more of a parent-child relationship. Because he was the parent. Because I have ADHD, I'm very disorganized. I'm very scatterbrained. I'm just that way. That's who I am. And right now I have a partner that understands that. And yes, he's definitely the more organized person in our relationship because I need that. But he's patient. He's gentle. He's kind. He, other than my grandparents, he's probably the most patient person, kind person I know. And he just is very, you know, that is who you are. That's okay. I'm going to try to help you, but I'm not going to parent you. I'm not your parent. I'm your husband. So it works out. It's good.
That is really nice.
And then my dad also has gotten really soft with age. He's not. So that's good. I can't remember exactly how old he is, but I think he's in his early 60s too, or maybe mid 60s. He what softened him is actually my youngest brother, who's autistic. He's mid-functioning. He's not conversational. He's verbal, but not conversational. And they softened both of them a lot. Softened my dad a lot, gave him a lot more patience. And then my stepmom also gave her patience, but kind of made her, she's always been very, very organized and very perfectionist and very, this is the way things are, very proper. And she's not so proper anymore, and she accepts mess now, and she's much less of a perfectionist and much more understanding of other people's faults, because now she understands it's like sometimes her house would just get completely torn apart and like literally things being destroyed because of my brother. So she kind of all of a sudden understood that at times things just can't be perfect. Oh, yeah, the thing you said about plants, my grandma used to always say, I mean, I know you're not religious, but my grandma used to always say, you meet plants and then God comes along and ruins them. She said that's what happened to her, because she wanted to go to nursing school before she had kids. They waited after she graduated from high school to get married, which not everybody did at that time. But she wanted her to graduate from high school, and my grandpa really supported that. And then they were going to go to nursing school before she had kids. But because the way birth control worked back then, she didn't really even know about condoms. And she knew about the diaphragm, but you couldn't get fitted for one until you were married. And they got married in Utah rather than California, and were going straight from their honeymoon from then. So she couldn't see the doctor until after her honeymoon. And she came back and she was pregnant.
Oh, got it. Yeah. And that took.
So she ended up with babies right away, 5 babies in the first 6 years she was married. But then she found out later that she had reproductive issues, ended up having a hysterectomy in her early 30s. And if she hadn't had babies right away and as quickly as she had, she probably wouldn't have been able to have any children at all. So she said it was. Her plans were ruined, but it was the best plans because God knew what was best. That's what she said.
Oh, that's nice. That's really nice. Yeah, I've kind of learned to just go with the flow and control what I can and not have too much of expectations. And I think that I've just become a more, like, practiced a lot of gratitude. Especially in my 30s, but starting in my late 20s, just like thinking, I think when my grandparents passed away and my parents kind of went through that and were grieving, I got to, I just realized that life is, you know, that life, that it, the cycle or the circle of life just really resonated with me. And I just realized, like, okay, my parents are going through this right now, and I'm going to be going through this at some point, you know, like I'm going to lose my parents and I'm going to be grieving. And that's really scary to think about. And I don't want to think about it, but then it just made me think, like, well, I want to make the most of my time with them. And I just want to cherish the, like, simple memories with them. And, you know, which is interesting because I did move across the country to New York. They're still in the Bay Area, but I talk to them like almost, like I talk to them like once a week. We do like a video chat, sometimes more. But I think that, yeah, I think that it just kind of take life one day at a time, and really try to show everyone important to me, like how much I care about them as much as I can. Saying I love you, writing postcards, checking in, just being like emotionally supportive and that sort of thing. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's great. I kind of have that same philosophy towards my mom because she seems to be pretty healthy now and on the right meds. But for the longest time, I never, she could just, one day I could get the phone call. And I still have that fear in the back of my head that one day I'll just get the phone call and she'll just be gone. And I'll never know when that day's going to happen. So
yeah,
I just try to love her as much as I can. I think what a lot of people don't realize is mental illness is some mental illnesses, not all, but a lot of mental illnesses are deadly illnesses. Just mm-hmm. don't watch the person die. They just one day, boom, they're dead.
Yeah.
But when you have chronic depression or bipolar depression or a lot of these things, suicide is a real risk, and it's, so I consider it a deadly illness.
Yeah.
And I would figure one day either that'll kill her or the meds she has to take to have a normal, healthy life and to live longer ultimately will kill her. So one mm-hmm. way or another, her illness will kill her.
Right. How often do you get to see her mom? Is she in California? She's in Illinois. Okay.
Every about 8 years or so, she gets this restlessness, wandering bug. My dad says it's because of her bipolar. I don't know. And she has to move to another state. So
I see. So she's been to a lot of places.
She'll be in there for about 8 years and then she'll move somewhere else.
Got it.
It's just kind of the way it works. She doesn't realize she does it, though. If I told her she did that, she would totally deny it, but she does it.
I see that there's a question here that Amy just posted. Is there anything about the current political climate that you do not like?
The divisiveness. I mean, before, we could agree to disagree, and that was just fine. Now, yeah. People are at each other's throats, and you can't have a difference of opinion. I think, especially if you're, I'm not putting you in this category at all, but especially mm-hmm. if you are at the very far extreme left, like mm-hmm. my one, I guess they're both brothers now. I still think of him as my sister, even though now he identifies as a man. Mm-hmm. It's still hard for me to think of him as a brother. Mm-hmm. He was my only sister. The two of them, they are very, very left, and they just sometimes just attack me for my views. And it's like I can't even disagree with them anymore. So I just don't even talk about politics, if at all possible, with them, because it always turns out really bad. They mm-hmm. become very hateful, and it just really makes me sad that they can't just accept me for, it's like if I have a difference of view, all of a sudden I'm being the hateful one and I'm being this and I'm being that, and I'm not, at least I don't think I am saying anything that hateful. I'm just disagreeing with them. And mm-hmm. I just feel like that's the thing now. It's like, oh, if you disagree with me, you're hateful, you're a bigot, you're racist, you're this and that. And it's like, no, I just disagree with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can understand that. I can understand that being frustrating. like especially with family, because you know you have some shared experience, you have history, and like, you know, that's really tough. I do feel like I would not identify as far left. I 5 minutes, okay. But I think that one reason why, because I can understand, without knowing much about like what exactly the issues were that you and your siblings were discussing, what I have felt, and friends of mine who are a little more far left than me, I think that maybe they go to that place quickly of saying, okay, of believing the other side is hateful, because it feels like what we're talking about is feels personal, a lot of the things, you know, a lot of the issues about human rights, thinking about programs that would help people, and just talking about people's experiences, the validity of their experiences. I think that it feels really personal. It can feel personal, and it's sometimes hard to separate. I don't know if there's a way around it, to be honest, when it is about issues that,
Well, I think there's a bad perception that people on the right don't care about people. And that's not it at all. We just have different solutions. We still care about people. Our solutions are just different. And I think that's just a really bad... the other thing I hate, and this doesn't just come from the left, this comes from a lot of people, is, oh, you're Christian or you're a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, therefore you are homophobic and you hate gay people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, sister is part of the LGBTQ plus community. I don't hate trans people. I don't hate gay people. I'm not homophobic. I'm not transphobic. So when I get that, I feel, you know, very hurtful. It's like just, it's almost the same. Because I know, I guess technically I could change my faith, but it's so ingrained in who I am that I can't change it. It is who I am, as much as your parents being Taiwanese immigrants is part of who you are. I have pioneers who came to Utah in my ancestry. To me, it's just as much as part of who I am. Mm-hmm. And so just to say, oh, well, you must be hateful just because of something that I can't change. It's just very hurtful to me. It feels bigoted to me.
Yeah.
It's just as bad, you know, because you're assuming that I'm some way just because of something that I can't change, just because of something that I am who I am.
Yeah. I can understand that. I think that I would be really frustrated too. And I think that there are many Christians and many people of faith. I'm not religious, but I have family and close friends who are. And... yeah, it doesn't, I mean, I think that many religions teach love and kindness and acceptance. But I think that there's just been this picture has been painted about really, really religious folks. And it's not, I don't believe it's accurate. I think that, it's just unfortunate.
Yeah, and I completely agree with that.
Absolutely. Yeah, I don't know how it got to this point, but I do think that there must just be some like really strong, loud voices. I think how the media has portrayed or how it's happened, but like I think when you have an opportunity like we have today to like actually talk to each other, like I think you can't know how someone feels about gay people or about trans people or about anyone unless you get to know them, and so. Unless you ask them, and it's uncomfortable to ask them that question, but if you really, you know, you can't just tell by knowing if like their affiliations.
Right.
I know we have to wrap up soon.
Yes, I know. this was fun. I really am glad I got to talk to you.
I'm glad too.
More about you.
Same, Sarah. And I know we'll continue to get to know each other better. And I still want to like meet all your kids one by one and like kind of know what they're all each about at some point.
That would be great.
Yeah.
And I'm homeschooling this year, so I just decided last night going to a conference. So a new journey.
Oh, wow. So like for the next, like starting in a month or soon.
Yeah. Yes. For how long. It depends on how it works out. If we're full time or part time. I haven't decided that yet. We're going to see how it goes.
Okay. Well, I wish you so much luck. And I know this kind of is a weird offer, but like if you ever need like half an hour, 20 minutes or half an hour of time for one of your kids to just like be distracted, I would be totally up for like getting on a video chat with them and reading a book to them, or I don't know.
Because I've decided we're going to do a lot of unit and multicultural studies. So at one point, that'd be great for them to hear like about a different culture and stuff too. I want to find somebody that's Japanese American other than my grandpa, my uncle, because he's been in, his family's been in the U.S. for so long. He barely knows anything about Japanese culture.
I would be happy to share with him a little bit about Taiwanese culture. Yeah, that could be really fun.
Yeah, because we're doing Japan first, just because that's what they want to learn about because of Pokemon.
Oh,
okay, I'm going to end the recording.
Okay.
Now.
All right.